Excuse me. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, I'm doing a podcast on Amadou Diallo. I'm going around the neighborhood to ask people what they remember about him. Do you know who he was?
Yeah.
Yeah? Can you tell me what you know about him?
All I know is he got shot by some cops. They thought he had a gun. It was his wallet or something like that.
Oh, that Guinea boy that he was killed here. I wasn't here, but I know the story.
The guy who the police shot? Yeah.
Killed over there.
Yeah, I remember that. Bam, 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 bam.
That's what most people remember about Amadou Diallo, the gunshots.
Amadou was a young immigrant from West Africa. He was also an unarmed black man who was killed by four white police officers 25 years ago. They fired 41 shots while he stood in the doorway of his apartment building. 19 hit him. The first likely killed him.
The four police officers who killed him were charged with second-degree murder, but were acquitted. The verdict caused a huge uproar at the time.
Today, there's a giant mural of Amadou's face taking up a wall on the corner of Wheeler Avenue at Westchester in the Bronx, the place near where he was killed.
His death has been covered extensively by the media, but so little was said about his life. Who was Amadou Diallo? Why did he leave his home and family to come to the U.S.? What was his life like in the months and weeks leading up to his death?
To answer those questions, we watched hours of news archives, documentaries, and court testimony. We read dozens of newspaper stories and looked to Amadou's mother, Kadiatou Diallo's memoir, My Heart Will Cross This Ocean, for early details of his life.
We also tracked down some of his old friends from New York and even some old neighbors.
This is Shoe Leather, an investigative podcast that digs up stories from New York City's past to find out how yesterday's news affects us today.
This season, we're going back to 1999 to tell the story of Amadou Diallo, an unarmed black man who was killed by four white police officers. I'm Neha Sethi.
And I'm Serena Balani.
This is Shoe Leather Season 5, After Amadou.
And you're listening to Boli.
Amadou Diallo was born in 1975 in Guinea, a country in West Africa. His mother, Kadiatou Diallo, was 16 years old, and Amadou was her first child. Growing up, Amadou's family moved often, mostly for his father's work. Saikou Diallo had many businesses, including gem trading. As a child, Amadou lived in Liberia, Thailand, and Singapore. He loved to read, play basketball, and soccer.
He was ahead of his time.
That's Amadou's mother, Kadiatou, in an interview with UrbanX TV.
He loved computer. He loved music. He loved hip-hop music. And he was that was his life.
He even loved American pop music. He sometimes had Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA on repeat at home. Amadou's mother had three more children and eventually divorced Amadou's father and started a business of her own. By the time Amadou was ready to go to college, he spoke five languages, including Spanish and Thai. But he had a stutter, sometimes finding it difficult to express himself.
In 1996, the year Amadou turned 21, he made a bold move. More than 200 Guineans immigrated to the U.S. that year, some of them for political reasons. It was one of the largest groups to immigrate from Guinea in a decade. And true to his nature, Amadou would be traveling among them.
But not because he was protesting a government, but because he wanted to pave his own path, earn a college degree in computer science literacy.
He graduated from the French International High School in Bangkok. And then right after that, he went to Singapore and he was interested in computer science literacy. So his dream was to come to the US, work hard and pay his way to college and achieve his education.
Amadou believed in the American dream, the idea that education was the key to success. Before heading to New York City, Amadou left a note for his mother.
"The solution is USA," he wrote. "Don't leave my brothers and sister here."
Amadou already had a cousin living in the US when he arrived. That's how he met his first roommate, Momodou Kajabi, and how he ended up at 1157 Wheeler Avenue in the Bronx.
Yeah, so that's how we ended up living, the three of us, me, Salu, who is Amadou's cousin, and Amadou Diallo himself.
He wanted to work for himself. Amadou had an interest in business. It came from his father, and according to his roommate, Momodou Kajabi, from his Fulani heritage. So Amadou set up a cart. He started selling socks, gloves, hats, and music tapes on East 14th Street. He often worked 6 or 7 days a week, for 10 to 12 hours a day. And when he came home from work, he liked to watch TV.
He liked baseball, especially the Yankees. There's no game of the New York Yankees that he wouldn't watch when he had the time to.
And Momodou says he was learning to cook.
You know, like you come here, but you prefer to have your own dish because that's what you know. His cousin will try to help him. Back home, usually the male don't cook, only females cook. So, but when we move, there's nobody there. There's no sister or mother to cook for you. You have to do it. You have to learn.
Momodou remembers Amadou as quiet, perhaps because he grew up with a stutter. He said he was kind.
He don't talk much, you know. Somebody you can easily interact with.
2 years after arriving in the U.S., Amadou was 23 years old and still living in that two-bedroom apartment on Wheeler Avenue with Momodou. From being the new guy on the block, Amadou was slowly becoming a friendly face in the neighborhood. He was waving hello to his neighbors, occasionally helping them out with small tasks, like his neighbor, Taylor.
My daughter was in, I think it was...
Amadou would watch her car while she dropped her young daughter inside to do her homework. He would do this so she didn't get a ticket.
He was a great person.
He was also getting ready to apply to college. He'd already saved $9,000. On the morning of February 3rd, 1999, Momodou left for work at 6 a.m. Momodou returned home that day just before midnight. He checked for mail and then went up to his apartment. Here's Momodou testifying in court about that day.
When I went inside my apartment, I went, took off my uniform, went to the bathroom, then I came out. When I came out, I was going to get some water out of the fridge. Then I saw Amadou Diallo lying on the couch.
Amadou was watching TV with his head resting on the arm of the sofa. The two men spoke briefly about the electric bill. Amadou was the one who usually paid. Momodou said he would leave the money on the table the next morning.
After that, I left him there watching TV. Then I went inside my room. Then I went to sleep.
It would be the last time Momodou would see Amadou alive.
Sometime after midnight, Momodou heard some noise and then banging at the door. It was the two police detectives.
One of the officers asked me to go and see, you know, if I can identify the person.
Momodou went downstairs to the vestibule. He saw Amadou lying on the ground, surrounded by blood.
In the mid-1990s, Anthony Lavari was a struggling musician.
He was just about to move into his new apartment with a friend, but that friend backed out, making Lavari responsible for coming up with rent on his own.
One night, he's sitting on the stoop of his apartment when he bums a cigarette from two women walking by.
So just out of despair, I looked at them. I said, I'm so sorry. Does anybody have an extra cigarette? And one of them said, sure. And they gave it to me. And they were like, why do you look so sad? So I just started crying and telling them everything that was going on. And one of them was like, don't worry, boo, I got you. My name is Bridget. And, you know, my boyfriend, he lives up around the corner. And don't worry, we got you. We got you. We started hanging out. This is what, back in the day, this is like how it was. This is like the late 90s, you know, things like that. It might sound strange now to anybody listening now, where you go off with strangers and, you know, but this is just how it was in that particular area.
One of the women introduces him to her boyfriend, Raz. He owns a convenience store on East 14th Street. The three of them started hanging out.
One day, there was a gentleman in front of his store, and he had bootleg cassettes. And do we need to explain what cassettes are to the young people? Do we? Okay. So cassettes. God, I feel old. Cassettes were like CDs, but they were small. They were cassettes, tape players, Walkmans, like guys, the 80s throwbacks. Just look up cassettes. You put them in Walkmans. Anyway, then Raza said, oh, this is my friend Boli.
Lavari says Boli had a great smile and he was cute.
And of course I flirted because that's just how I am. And he just was, I remember one of the first things I said was like, you have a really nice smile. And he was just very polite. He didn't flirt back. Damn it. And he just gave a gracious smile back and said, oh, thank you. Very gentle. Very, very gentle. Very meek. Very gentle. That's important to remember.
A comfort grew between the two. Lavari began asking Boli for tapes of his favorite artists, Mary J. Blige, Drew Hill, Faith Evans, and Little Kim.
One of Lavari's jobs was at a record store.
Coconuts at the time, and they would have the paper would be delivered.
One morning, Lavari was opening up the store.
And there was a newspaper on the floor, and it was Daily News, and it said 41 shots. And there was a black and white dark photo, almost like blurry photo. And I picked it up and I said, that is fucked up. That's horrible.
On the front page was a story about a man who'd been shot 41 times by 4 police officers. The man was standing in the entryway of his own apartment building.
And I put the paper to the side. And I continued to help open up the store with my manager.
A little while later, Lavari gets a beep on his pager from Raz.
He usually pages when Boli stalks the cassettes that Lavari's been waiting for. So Lavari ignores it and keeps working.
We all did this. We didn't have cell phones, but we all managed to hang out with these beepers. It's like if you were dating somebody or if it was your friend, you could write 143, which meant I love you, which was one letter, which was I, the number one. 4 was 4 letters for love, L-O-V-E, and then 3 for you, Y-O-U, 143. So that was the other things you put, like 143. If you were mad at somebody, you could write asshole, and you turn it around. It was 3704558. And you turn it around, it looked like asshole.
But then Roz pages again. And it wasn't some silly pager code.
I said, hey, Raza, what's going on? I think he beat me twice. And he was like, oh, that's terrible. It's horrible. Did you see 41 times he was shot? I said, oh, yeah. I saw that on the front page. I was like, that's horrible what they did to that guy. And he was like, the guy. I was like, yeah. I was like, that's messed up. I saw the front page of that. And he was like, that was Boli. I said, what? I said, no, that's not the name. The photo was so dark. Actually, I thought it was like quite an unprofessional photo for a newspaper to have. That's how dark the picture was. I looked again, and then, of course, the smile. Then I looked at the eyes, and I was like, oh, it was him. But it said Amadou. That was why I didn't equate it at first, because it said Amadou Diallo.
Lavari's Boli was New York City's Amadou.
Meanwhile, thousands of miles away in Guinea, Amadou's grandmother is having bad dreams. She dreams of a calf. The calf wants milk, but its mother doesn't have any to give.
The next morning, a phone rings. Amadou's aunt, Kadiatou's sister, picks up. It's a relative from New York, and he's asking to speak to a man in the house. Something's wrong. Isn't it nighttime in New York? What could they want to say at this hour? And isn't Amadou asleep?
The voice on the other end of the line doesn't want to speak to Kadiatou, because in her family tradition, bad news is usually passed to the male family members.
But Kadiatou doesn't take no for an answer.
5 days after Amadou's death, his mother Kadiatou lands in New York. She needs to make sense of what happened to her son.
She steps off the plane at Kennedy International Airport and into the city's arena. 2 big players, Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
We can't allow the understandable emotions that emerge from a horrible incident to cloud reality.
And activist Al Sharpton, both want her on their team.
Racial profiling was one of the issues that had to be dealt with.
The first thing that Kadia Tu wants to do is go to 1157 Wheeler Avenue in the Bronx, where her son lived and died.
So a black NYPD van takes her there.
She gets out of the police van. There's a crowd of people surrounding her. She walks up to the front stoop of the building, nearly collapsing on the way, and then cries out her son's name.
Amadou! Amadou! Amadou!
Kadia Tu is taken up to Amadou's apartment. She never realized it was so small. She smells his clothes. She meets people who say they knew him.
She's then whisked away by the New York City Police Department into a hotel room. They tell her that the city will pay for her stay.
Here's Al Sharpton speaking on the documentary Trial by Media.
I said she's with the cops in Giuliani. They got her a big suite overlooking Central Park on Fifth Avenue. They're going to use her against us.
In this room, she meets someone from Sharpton's team. That's when she realizes she doesn't feel comfortable staying under the city's care. Sharpton arranges for a different hotel room and tells Kadia Tu that the community will pay for it. It's a move that places her knowingly or unknowingly on Sharpton's team.
Amadou! 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 Amadou!
In the days and weeks following Amadou's death, Al Sharpton helps organize protesters. They demand the officers who shot Amadou be held accountable. These protests get a lot of attention. At a news conference, Kadia Tu, Amadou's mother, speaks out about her son's death for the first time.
The mother of our brother, Ahmed Diallo.
Here's Kadia Tu in Trial by Media, talking about that news conference.
The first night at the National Action Network. That was the first night I spoke out in public in my life.
1 month after the killing, the four officers are indicted for second-degree murder. The trial begins. Inside the courtroom, Kadia Tu watches as the officers who shot her son talk about him to a jury. This is from Sean Carroll's testimony, one of the four cops on trial for shooting Amadou.
Were you suspicious of him?
Oh, absolutely.
What made you suspicious? Could you tell us, please?
Just his actions alone, the way he was peering up and down the block, and the way he it would appear to me that he slinked back into the vestibule.
There was an objection over the word slinked.
The way he went back into the vestibule, and then as we were backing up, his head peering out and keeping a vigilant eye on us.
To the cops, Amadou looks suspicious.
But other people who knew Amadou describe him differently.
I've said this. If I'm walking down a street at 3 o'clock in the morning and I see a person and there's nobody else around, I'm crossing the street. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, it's dark, I'm the only person, there's another person, I'm crossing the street. I don't want no trouble. But I would say if I was walking down the street and I didn't know Amadou, but I saw Amadou, not knowing who he was, I wouldn't cross the street. I would walk right by him because he was a meek person. He had a gentle persona.
Momadou, Amadou's old roommate, thinks about what that moment must have been like for Amadou.
This guy is very quiet. You know, people that they want to say something, it takes time for them to say a single word. How do you call it? When you are with him, you have to give him that time for him to say what he has to say. You cannot rush on him. That's how he is. Okay. That's how he talks.
Oh, did he still have a stutter?
That's what I was trying to tell you.
Oh.
He stutters a lot. That's what I was trying to get.
Oh.
What do I use here? Even the simplest explanation is going to take him a while.
Amadou stuttered. He needed time to say what he had to say. Momadou still thinks about how this might have affected his interactions with the cops that night.
I think they were over doing what they were supposed to do, and they didn't take that time to get to know, you know, because otherwise this wouldn't have happened. Because Amadou is a very quiet, calm guy. So I'm thinking probably they were asking him something and he couldn't say it and they didn't know. And everything started getting out of hand in a split second. I think that's what happened.
1 year after Amadou's death, the jury reaches a verdict.
Not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty.
All four officers acquitted.
Kadia Chu had become a powerful spokesperson for her son. She did not want his humanity to be lost in the media frenzy. But she was not able to testify. She later told reporters that even after the trial, she still didn't understand what happened to her son.
The protests continued after the verdict.
We're going to boycott in this city. We're going to hold our wallet until the federal government brings charges of civil rights on the case of Amadou Diallo.
Kadia Chu filed a civil lawsuit against the city of New York. 3 years later, she won the case and was awarded a $3 million settlement.
I do not want to dwell so much in what is the amount, what is supposed to be done about financial situation for my son, because nothing, nothing can replace him.
Kadia Chu started the Amadou Diallo Foundation with the settlement money from the city. The foundation has since awarded over 50 scholarships since her son's death. It's a cold February evening when I walked up to Amadou Diallo Place. There's a crowd of people surrounding a giant mural of Amadou's face.
Thank you so much for being here today. This is to mark one very historic moment.
Kadia Chu Diallo is speaking at a vigil. It's the 25th anniversary of Amadou's death.
He had dreams. He had dreams, and he was about to achieve his dreams. His dreams was cut short by 41 bullets.
In death, Amadou Diallo had become a cause to rally behind, an example of policing gone wrong. But Amadou was also a traveler, someone who believed in education and bought into the American dream. He was a man who was learning to cook African dishes, who liked to listen to Bruce Springsteen and watch the Yankees. A son to his mother. And he was becoming a friendly face on Wheeler Avenue.
Following the families who know the cost.
One more time.
Fighting in the name of the ones we lost. Following the families who know the
cost. Shoe Leather is a production of the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. This episode was reported, written, and produced by
Neha Sethi
and Serena Balani. Joanne Farian is our executive producer and professor. Rachel Quester and Peter Leonard are our co-professors. Special thanks to Columbia Digital Libraries.
Shoe Leather's theme music, Squeegees, is by Ben Lewis, Doron Zunis, and Camille Miller, remixed by Peter Leonard. Other music by Blue Dot Sessions. Our Season 5 graphic was created by Indy Schultens with help from Serena Balani.